woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello and welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures, we've got to be up today. We're down all yesterday. SP Futures up 36. NASDAQ Futures down 200. We can't have a down day. We know that, which is fine. I mean, it's cool. It's a good time for the clients and good time for everybody. It's just what we're doing now. We're turning into the Weimar Republic, in one man's opinion, but... We know how that ended, but let's just hope we don't end that way. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
The Cubs can't lose, eh?
Cubs cannot lose. Can you a couple of things about the Cubs? First of all, the Reds started their road trip in first place, and they're leaving their road trip in last place. So can you imagine how demoralizing a four-game sweep has been for them?
And I think the Reds have always been, in the last few years... You know, I don't watch them against other people, but I've watched them against the Cubs. I think the Reds have been the Cubs' toughest opponent because they're very athletic, they're very fast, and the Cubs just this time, how many people did the Reds walk yesterday? Five or six, and they all scored. Good Lord!
Oh yeah, it was like the first three games, the Cubs came from behind in the ninth inning to take the game, or ninth, or and then in a couple of cases win it in the tenth. It was like yesterday the Reds just said, "Oh, the hell with it, just get this over with, do it now."
Yeah, it's a but I was talking to some people.
One other thing about the Cubs, because they've had so many pitching injuries, and I think back to the offseason and a couple of things that happened. One is I had very mixed feelings about trading Owen Casey for. Jose Cabrera, and yet thank God they did, because that's a good starting pitcher in their rotation that they, I don't know where they'd be without him. And the other one is Shota Imanaga. Is they offered him, they didn't intend to keep him. They gave him the qualifying offer expecting him to say no thank you, I want to go get a multi-year deal someplace, but by giving him the qualifying offer they would have gotten a compensation draft pick after he signed someplace, and instead he surprised them by accepting it, and he's been terrific this year. So,
yeah.
A couple of things that, you know, where as I was looking at them in the off season, and I'm looking at it now and saying, oh my God, thankfully they did that.
Well, I don't know if they're smart enough to realize, but I really liked Owen Casey, but this guy Ballesteros has filled that spot pretty easily.
Well, he's filled the spot in the lineup easily, yeah, because he's a good hitter, and they knew that, and I think he was always going to fill the spot. The question was you know, Casey going to be their everyday right fielder, and were they going to be, was it going to be a rotation out there? And then, of course, they have, they brought in a new third baseman, so now they have a utility player there. So, you know, it has worked out beautifully for them, better than they could have imagined.
A lot of it is like you say, a lot of it is luck. Their luck with their pitchers isn't so good, but the thing that, you know, from somebody who pitched softball 40 years, I mean, the people behind you are so key. I mean, it's less obvious in Major League Baseball maybe, but, you know, I've said this 100 times, but our shtick on our pretty good neighborhood team was that we had some pretty good infielders, and we would turn, I'd say, at least a double play a game, maybe a double play and a half a game, which is really, you know, an out or two that nobody else gets. Now, if the other guys beat the crap out of me when I'm pitching, it doesn't do any good that game. But over a course of a season, that's, you know, 15, 20 outs that other people don't get. And you watch the Cubs, and the defense, seemingly every game, gets a ball or two that the other team doesn't get.
Yeah.
Between the second baseman, the shortstop, and the center fielder. I don't think I've ever seen a team with, you know, gold gloves. I don't think Dansby's got a gold glove, but he clearly has gold glove.
I think he has in the past, though.
But I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong is probably the best center fielder in baseball. Second baseman, second to none. But they're getting plays that other people, as much as I love Ryan Sandberg, I'm not sure this guy doesn't get balls that Sandberg didn't get. I mean, Sandberg was maybe about as consistent as you could possibly get, but it's hard to compare. But I'm saying this guy really gets some balls that maybe I've never seen other people get in a long time. I'm just saying. That extra out, you think it doesn't make a difference, but over these guys are so close that 5-6 outs a week or 10 or whatever the number is just dramatic stuff, Kevin. I mean, coming from an old pitcher.
And it's also when you get the outs. And sort of they get them in key situations. And it's not that they, you know, they gear up and they're just so much better on defense in key situations. They're better in all situations, but when it happens, you know, to get you out of an inning, to get you out of a jam, that's just so huge. It's one thing to be taking runners off the bases. It's another thing to be taking, you know, to be ending in an inning with a terrific double play that, you know, looked like a base hit all the way before it was hit.
In grad school, one of the guys asked, we had this one course that was actually one of the courses I remember the most because it was a, I don't know, what do you want to call it, Kevin? It's like a problem-solving course where you kind of went from topic to topic and tried to apply what you learned and other stuff. This is the course where we designed compensation packages for people, and the guy was doing research for hospital care and how you could put that in regression analysis and things like that. So it was like five or six totally odd topics. One day, somebody, we were talking about sports, and somebody said, how do people respond under pressure? And the guy goes, that's simple. If you're good enough, you do better under pressure. If you're not, you do worse. So, I mean, if you're a really good defender, you're going to do better in the pressure situations because you just are, according to this guy.
Because you just are. And also, confidence makes a big difference, too. You know, it's the old expression, if you think it helps, it does.
Yeah. Well, you know, Kevin, we joust back and forth on the show a lot, and I don't even know whether you can call these places. I don't understand what the truth. I mean, I don't feel like Jack Nicholson. You can't handle the truth. But today there's a headline here: Trump threatens EU with much higher tariffs if no trade deal signed by a new deadline. Okay, he did that, but as of all this time, why isn't the headline "Trump threatens Americans with higher tariff on EU goods"? We're seeing these guys having to pay back money. Haven't these idiots figured out now that these tariffs are on us and not on EU? They might be on EU goods, but the headline says EU's got to pay them, and they don't. I mean, why does this bug me so much? I mean, this is absolute wrong reporting. It's a headline on CNBC, which isn't even a...
Well, it is on CNBC, but are you telling me that nobody has reported inflationary effect of it?
Not in a headline like that.
Well, maybe not in a headline, but I've seen reporting nonstop about it. So,
well, the next headline, by the way, I'm never supposed to agree with you. A, I don't want to. Yes, I do. Toyota fourth quarter profit misses by wide margin as UF tariffs drive 49% slump. Okay. The part that everybody misses here, because, you know, we did a lot of work on tariffs. Matter of fact, we had a final exam. One of the questions was on tariffs. The part that everybody misses here, and obviously the administration doesn't want anybody to know about it, and the people who do the news evidently don't want to talk about it either. The study here, Kevin, is, okay, there's tariffs on Toyota. We don't like Toyota. Somebody doesn't like them. Whatever. Somebody is convinced the sneaky way to tax people by tariffs is somehow okay. Anyway, but we got him on there. But now, the study that needs to be made is, okay, there's a, I don't know, I have no, what's the tariff on a Toyota, 10%, 15, I don't know. So say it's 10%. The key is that caused Lincoln, Cadillac, well, not just Lincoln, he's Toyota's on all high-end cars, but is that caused the people here to see the opening to raise the prices on theirs? And I think the answer is probably yes, but I don't know. But that's the fly in the ointment. When you put a tariff on somebody, there's like three variables. Okay, I'm going to put a 25% tariff on Mercedes-Benzes. So what does that do? Okay, Mercedes might say, whoa, wait a minute. We'll cut our price a little bit because we can't compete 25% higher. So we'll cut our cost 10%. Now, you get here, the dealer in this country might say, man, I'll cut back mine a little bit too because now I can't. He may, all right? But then, no matter what, it's going to end up somewhat higher. If the Cadillac guy goes, wait a minute, the Mercedes that was used to be 50 grand is now 65, and I was competing with my Cadillac at 40, now I can go to 47. All you did was screw the American consumer even more and help out Cadillac, which maybe that's what you really do if they're bringing you a sack of dough or whatever. This is a really simple phenomenon, Kevin. Everybody seems to think it's so complicated, and somehow we can't possibly understand it. It's easy to understand. There's like four variables.
But it isn't totally simple in that it doesn't all go back to the consumer. We've had this discussion. There are some industries where they can pass on their costs all the way through to whether it's supplier to manufacturer or whether it's manufacturer to consumer. But there's a whole lot of businesses where the consumers are not going, people are just not going to pay more than what the value is to them. And so the producers got to eat the cost, and that's a challenge for them. I've recently modeled this, just to look at it, that companies, if they need to squeeze costs, they have to find ways to improve their yields because, when I say their yields, it's how much of their stuff do they make right the first time, because if they don't do it, they're kind of screwed.
I
don't think it's as simple as you're saying.
I'm not saying it was simple, but I'm saying the variables.
Well, you didn't use that word.
Okay, it's simple because the variables are very defined. It's not simple in the sense of how it all plays out. But there's no question. There's the tariff number. There's the tax. It's going someplace. Okay. There's somebody on the foreign side. What do they do to negate that? Do they drop their price, which obviously helps the American consumer? Vis-a-vis the tariff, does the dealer here drop his? And what about the person who's not affected by the tariff? Can he raise his? Those are really the four. How it all plays out, you're absolutely correct.
But there is the let's either split it or the overseas supplier has to eat it because they're so dependent on the buyer in this country that the buyer has buying power.
Well, but I think what you're, for lack of a better term, the mistake that you're making with your analysis is not in anything wrong with what you said, but you're defining an industry where 80% of the stuff is made here, okay? And you and I are importers, and we're competing. But by the way, we buy all our stuff from, say, Mexico, so we put a tariff on Mexico. Well, you and I are in a perfectly competitive business, or damn close. We're selling toothbrushes. Okay, well, we can't just add the price of the toothbrush because it's a pretty free market. Toothbrushes are $2. We can't say our toothbrush is $2.50. Guess what, buddy? We're eating it. But all these industries that we're playing with here are not perfectly competitive whatsoever. There's what, two manufacturers here, and if we raise the price of Toyotas, I guarantee you, Ford, General Motors are all over it. And we also are not competitive enough here to where if you and I would hope that if Ford raises their prices by 20%, that their sales go down 30% and screw them. But that's not what we see happening. They raise their price 20%, their sales go down 10. They're happy as pigs in slop. So when you start talking about a non-competitive industry, I'm saying the analysis changes constantly, and I think that's what a lot of people.
Yeah, I think which is why I did use the term some industries.
Yeah, yeah. It's some. You're right. You and I are just screwed because guess what? We can't charge more than $2 for a toothbrush, and if we buy it from Mexico, it's our tough luck. I agree with you 100%. But that's not happening in cars, I don't think. I'm just saying.
What you're seeing is a lot of cars, that are manufactured in the U.S. are suddenly advantaged. It depends on where their parts are, but they also got tax advantage in the most recent tax bill too.
Unless you were forced to do it, or else you got an F, the answer is between, here's the question, assume perfectly competitive, assume cartel, assume monopoly, are three totally separate answers, Kevin. And here, even on the show to a certain extent, we blur that, and you really can't. You know, and you're right, it's industry by industry, you're absolutely right. But I don't know how many competitive, I mean, We can put a tariff on cola nuts. Well, we don't have any cola nuts. All it does is raise the price of Coca, right? Or cola, whatever the hell it is.
What about un-cola nuts?
Yeah, what about the un-cola? God, how old was that commercial?
That was a long time ago.
It was a good commercial, wasn't it? Wow,
it really was.
We're all fired up to go to the Revolution Brewery today. To see,
great. Tell me about the event, and then I'm going to tell you about an event. But
we're just going to go hanging. I mean, it's 4 to 6. I have no idea. There's a lot of people I know since Di came on the show, Diane Kelly, a few of us are coming from here. Of course, everything is a procedure. Can you get me back for this train, that train? Don't worry, I'll get you back. And allegedly, Mr. Flanagan and our buddy Dee are going to meet us there, and John Lee. So
yeah, I'd love to be there too. Unfortunately, I have a class at 9 o'clock in the morning, so I'm not coming into Chicago for a party tonight.
Plus, if you drove in at rush hour and tried to get to Belmont and Kedzie, you'd be cursing me the whole way.
Oh yeah, no, I would have to come in the afternoon, early in the afternoon.
You'd have to get your helicopter.
I would, if only I had one.
Well, you should put that on the bucket list.
Yeah, I should put that on the bucket list. What do you want me to learn to fly it to?
Well, no. Remember, Oprah had hers, and she lived over in Michigan, and every day after the show, she'd fly her helicopter across the lake to home.
Yeah, that's fine. Maybe I can thumb a ride with her.
Yeah, man, I bet she didn't fly it. If you get the size boat at which I would like to come on as a guest, I don't think you're driving it.
Well, you know what? Yeah, we got to talk to Kenny about boats, you know, and yachts and things like that, because he would be our Sherpa for
actually,
that.
Actually, Carl's our guy.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, I drove my own 45-footer.
Yeah, well.
There you go.
If we went out fishing or whatever, I would have been the one at the helm.
Well, there you go. We did this seminar down, it has to be 2001. That's where I tell my story about Micron. We were down in the Bahamas. And, Why these guys did the seminar down there, I have no idea. But come on, and Audrey's telling me how I love the Bahamas because they have this stuff, conch or beats conch. I get down there, I hated it. I had a conch omelet, I had a conch sandwich for lunch, I was done with conch, I wanted to go home. I didn't like it down there at all. Nothing but bugs. Anyway, but we went to the Atlantis, and they got all these massive ships, or yachts, or whatever the hell they are, in the little harbor there. And you could rent one of those things. You know, you could rent one for a week for like $10,000, and it was, you could live on the boat. You had like 4 or 5 people, whatever the hell they were, taking care of you, cooking for you, all the booze is included. But Carl, these things, I walked down, you know, pretty tall guy, I walked down the deck. On the dock, the bow is 5 feet over my head. I mean, these things are, so I go, what's the deal? It doesn't seem like a lot of dough for one of these things. The guy goes, well, if you want to move it, it's $15,000 to fill up.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you rent the vessel, but you get to pay for the fuel.
Yeah, so if you want to go for a ride, it's like $15,000.
That's right. And the problem is that, I mean, you know, mine was 45 feet long, so by those standards, not very large. Half a mile a gallon.
Wow.
So, multiply. Well, it, of course, at the time I owned it, diesel was a lot less expensive than it is now.
Well, how much do you? You always see people over in Michigan City or in Portage, even if they have a pretty big honking boat that they can trailer, they're always filling up at the gas station. How much more do you get screwed if you fill up in the water?
Oh, if you go to Marina, it's god awful expensive.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have a slight monopoly on the fact that you can't go to the gas station on the corner. So there's on top of that, they are double gouging you because the marine diesel is untaxed. It's dyed. You can't put it in your truck because it doesn't have road tax on it. Of course, you don't have to pay road tax because you're not on a road, right? And it's invariably considerably more expensive than the same diesel at the pump, which does have road tax on it. So guess who's pocketing the spread on that?
Well, this guy, I'm up early in the morning, imagine that, I'm staying down in Portage. I pull in this gas station, I see this boat. The thing had, it had to be, it's one of those, you know, like a, what these call cigarette boats, a big speed boat. Well, the thing has to be, I don't know how long, behind this huge truck. And the guy's filling it up. The guy's got to be 85 years old. And his wife is up in the thing, like doing some last-minute cleaning. She's got to be 80. And I'm looking at the thing, the trailer, the guy's had three huge tires in a row.
Yeah, it's triple axle. Yeah, it's
yeah, and I'm sitting there going, I don't know where this guy, if he puts the boat in the river, the boat's going to touch the other side. He backs it in. Plus, he had two of the biggest propellers. His two monster engines in the thing, and I'm going, what is this old duffer going to do? Put it in the water, drive 80 miles an hour for an hour, and pull it back out? I mean,
well, that's about all those. We used to call those penile extenders down in Florida because that's basically what they are. They are useless for fishing or pretty much anything other than making a lot of noise and going very fast. But if you think my 45 was bad on fuel, oh my God. Those things are ridiculous.
Well, this was gas too. He was filling up with gas.
Well, because they're those kinds of go fasts. They, you know, light is part of it. Diesels are heavy. Diesels are great for lots of torque, but when it comes to those kinds of boats, they're gas powered, which makes it even worse because they're way less efficient than a diesel. So yeah, that guy probably, my guess is he's probably burning 5 gallons a mile. Of course, he's doing 80 miles an hour, but, you know.
Well, I used to, we had an old speedboat when I was like 17, and I got really, really good at backing the thing into the water.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sitting around, I don't know how I would have backed this thing in.
Well, it's, there, yeah, part of it is that there's a real art to different vessels because the center of thrust and the lack of a keel on things like that. The center of thrust is back there by the screws. Okay, on a boat like mine, on my fishing boat, I could actually walk it sideways with the engines because the way the keels on those larger vessels are set up and such. When you get good at it, you can actually move the boat sideways using engine thrust with very little forward or aft motion. But that doesn't work on those. And so the way they handle is totally different. And the outboard ones are even worse because all the mass is off the back end. So,
well, Dr. J had a Sea Ray maybe 29, 30 feet. And
yeah,
we practiced, and I got really good at moving the thing around because you use the motors for your steering.
Well, those are IO drive generally,
yeah.
Or stern drive. So, well, yeah, so the actual thrust vectors to some extent.
Well, one night, I mean, you could actually turn it on a dime with the motors.
Oh, yeah.
But one night we're out, and one of the motors conks out.
Right.
You could not steer that thing under 5 miles an hour. Could not steer it with a rudder. Rudder's the size of my hand, for God's sake.
Well, there's no rudder.
Yeah.
Right, for out of steering.
Well, there is, but you know. It's,
well, it's the size of a postage stamp.
We tried to get into Versey Harbor. We literally had to ask people, we're going to go real slow to push us off and point us toward the harbor, or else we'd have banged right into the side of the thing. Because you got to make a full 90-degree turn going in. We could not make the turn at 3 miles an hour without the other motor. There's no way you could.
They get real interesting with one down.
Yeah. I mean, when we went to dock it, I said, John, I'm just going to pull up at like half a mile an hour. You hop out and pull us in with the rope. How else could we have got in? With two motors, you could put it on a dime.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, one of the things about owning a vessel like that is before you have that kind of thing happen, you really need to, you know, go out there and deliberately, you know, drop some life jackets in the water on a couple of lines or whatever, and then sit there and shut one off on purpose.
Yeah.
And figure out how it handles with one down, because you can get some really serious surprises in that situation ready for it.
When he first got it, we were in the harbor, and he goes, what do you think we ought to do? I said, well, I'm just a guest, but I don't know how to drive it. Do you? And he goes, well, not really. I said, why don't we get it out of here and go down to Monroe Harbor where they got the cans, and let's practice for a couple hours. You know, it didn't take us half hour apiece to where we could put the thing right on the can. It didn't take much at all. But, boy, if you didn't do that, I don't know what you'd do.
Well, it's and like I said, they're all different too. That's the other thing. Is that I had a catamaran, relatively small catamaran for a little while. I had a small fishing boat for a fairly decent period of time, and then I had the large one, and you know, generally two at a time, because while I could run the 45 by myself, it wasn't a lot of fun, and the whole point of being on the water is to have some fun. So if I wanted to go out by myself, I took the little guy.
How big do these things get to before you have a maneuvering thrusters like the Enterprise?
So there are people with vessels of the size that I had that have bow thrusters. My personal view is that for the most part, until you get into really large, if you know how to handle the boat, the thruster really doesn't do a whole lot for you. On the other hand, if you don't, they're extremely useful, and in that, having that in the bow gives you the ability to, you know, to move the front as well as the back. Because, but again, inboard straight shaft engines operate completely differently. And then you have some of these newer ones that have these isopod things that are kind of like stern drives, but under the hull. Okay, which means the, you know, the pod turns.
Oh, okay.
So there's vectoring there. That's a whole different game. I don't like that design simply because if anything happens to it, you know, you hit something underwater, you can shear it off, which is there's a really big hole at the bottom of the boat there.
we had one of these kind of boondoggle things down in Florida with the CBOE, right? So we're going to take a ride on the Intercoastal. And you ever been down to Florida, the Lauderdale side? I mean, Intercoastal's got one beautiful house after another. So they show up with this boat, it had to be like 125 feet. There's like eight of us having dinner on this thing. I mean, they could have had 50 people in there. I'm sitting there, how the hell is this guy? All of a sudden, he maneuvering thrusters, he shoves us away from the dock. Well, the thing was so big, I'm going, how the hell is he going to turn this thing around? Well, he finds another spot where the Intercoastal, you know, it comes to a fork. The guy does the equivalent of a 3-point turn.
Yeah,
with the maneuvering thrusters, I'm going, that's how they do it.
Oh, well, when I bought Gigabyte, it was in a canal. Where it was docked at the time was in a canal that was not much wider than the boat was long. And in order for me to get out of there, after I closed on it, I had to be able to rotate it within, you know, something.
What do people do when we were
4 feet longer than it is?
Whatever year I was, we went down to see the Irish get their ass kicked by Nebraska. And we took a ride through Coral Gables, which is really old Miami. All these little canals, intercoastals, everybody's got some boat behind their house. This is how many years ago. None of them look like they ever moved.
Well, some don't, and that's really sad because, I mean,
that kind of defeats the point of having a boat.
It does, and then the other thing about it is that anything that stays in the water has to have bottom paint on it, and it's an anti-fouling compound that's got copper in it, so that it so you don't get barnacles and stuff growing on there. Well, if it doesn't move at all, they'll grow on there anyway. So it's you'd be shocked at how well things grow in salt water, in particular.
Well, but
you really would.
I'm going to pull you guys back off of.
Yeah, do that.
of your toys, because there's a couple other, although I do think Bow Thrusters would be a pretty good name for a rock band.
Yeah.
Maybe a softball team too. Last night we had graduation. All faculty goes, we all get our, get my annual, get all the regalia out and all of that. And we had, several, hundreds and hundreds. I don't even know the number of graduating students. A lot of them are, we had quite a few high school students who've been taking dual credit courses, and they're walking out of here with a technical certificate that gets them probably through at least their first year of college before they go off to the, a four-year school. But I'm telling you, as I sit there, just watching person walk across the stage and down the steps with a big smile on the face is really an uplifting experience. And I look forward to the event, even though it's long and probably drags on a little bit long, but it is so cool. And the students, all the first generation students have sashes that say first generation. That must have been probably at least 40%, maybe 50 of the students who graduated last night, and it's just such a cool event. And
Kevin, where did you guys hold it?
At Notre Dame.
Okay.
Notre Dame was I don't know what they have tonight, but they're busy with something tonight because we usually do it on Friday night, and so instead we had to do it on Thursday. Some of my professors couldn't make it because they had classes that they had to teach for non-graduating people. It is just a nice event. It really is.
Were they doing a convo?
Yeah, in the basketball arena, sure.
Okay, not on the other side, in the basketball arena. That's cool.
Yeah.
What? I hope nobody got blank diplomas like some of our guys.
I actually think everybody gets one, and then they get mailed their actual insert for it.
So. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know why they do that, right? Because that way, if you pull something during the ceremony, they just have.
Well, it isn't even that. It's just a practical matter, because you never know who's going to be there and who's not. So as each student checks in, they get a card with their name on it, and then as they walk onto the stage, they hand it to someone who then gives it to the person who's reading the names. And that way, they don't have to be in alphabetical order. They don't have to be in any order at all. Alphabetical order by height or whatever. It's just as a practical matter. You don't know who's going to show up next. And so the idea of digging out, this person's diploma versus a different person's diploma is just—it's not practical. The whole thing wouldn't move along as quickly.
A couple guys who partied too much senior year.
Well, all I can tell you is this: performative art, in my opinion, ought to be boycotted and not celebrated. So there you go.
Yeah, we didn't see anything, any disruption or not anything.
No, I'm just saying, were it me, I would not participate in something that was performative art as a student or anything else.
It's not for you. It's not for you. It's for your parents family.
Well, guess what? My parents could bite me. I'm the one that showed up with supposedly. We were supposed to have all white pants on, and guess who had tan ones on at his high school graduation?
Well, my Notre Dame graduation, my grandmother, my two aunts, it was the highest point in their life because I was the first one in the family to graduate college. They had the most spectacular weekend. It wasn't for me. It was for them.
Well,
Carl, I totally disagree with you. And in fact,
we
had all the business faculty, got together at a restaurant afterwards for drinks. So I'm a little groggy this morning. I didn't drink, but we were up late. When you meet the families, because there was another family there, and I was able to sit there and talk to them. So many of our students they have kids, they have families, they have jobs, and then they come to school And you know, and it's really an achievement, and it's a family achievement because the families have to make this work for them as well. I think it is so cool when a 10-year-old kid gets to see mom or dad walk across the stage getting a diploma. It is for the families. I think there's a lot of proud parents of first-generation college students. It is as much for the families as it is for the students.
The students do
the work, and the students get the praise. No doubt about it. Every one of them gets a little medallion, and the purpose of the medallion is give it to someone who helped you get to where you are.
Yeah, Kevin, I don't object to the ceremony itself. I object to it being performative. If you're going to hand out diplomas, hand out actual diplomas.
Well, they did. They did at Notre Dame and University of Chicago because it was much more organized.
They didn't at my high school. And all of the graduations I've been at, they have not.
We had a couple guys we knew that got the diploma, but there was nothing inside because they needed another class.
Well, okay, but see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, is that precisely the sort of performative nonsense I disagree with?
But they invited their parents up, and the parents didn't know.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But University of Chicago was interesting. You know, what Kevin's talking about, in my life, there's a lot of learning experiences, and I had it easy. I went to college. I stayed, at Notre Dame. I didn't have to work. We didn't have any money. It was just cheap. I went to University of Chicago, same thing. I commuted. I was during the day. I didn't have a family. I worked weekends, made enough money loading docks. It couldn't, it was hard work, but you couldn't get much easier. And one summer to save dough, the summer between the 2 years, I took two night classes. They were brutal. I was working as a janitor where I could study during the day. I didn't have any family. I didn't have any of that kind of stuff. But what it taught me is these people who go to law school like for 5 years or something at night and have to go home to a family on the 11 o'clock train or something, my heart is absolutely out to them. What Kevin's talking about, we have all those other pressures on you. I didn't have any of them, and yet I immediately recognized, what if I did? This is a shit show to start with. The 3-hour class sitting there in an unair-conditioned place. What if I actually had to go home and the kids are acted up and the wife's? I can't even imagine that. So my hat is so off to these people. When Kevin talks about this, I'm kind of right with him because I had to do that for one stinking summer, not for years.
Yeah. So, Carl, I understand your objection, and I get what you're saying. I think you have to run it in a way that's practical, and because you just don't know who's going to be there until they're either there or they're not. I don't know how else I would do it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just it's like I said, it's even in places and in circumstances where the numbers are small enough. that there really isn't that excuse.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have thousands.
Oh no, so. I mean, I've been to a couple of collegiate commencements and dual enrollment high school ones where you're talking there's 4,000 kids in there or whatever whatever it is, right? It's huge. Some of the college ones in particular, the undergrad stuff is monstrous. Right?
Well, University of Chicago was really more of a faculty show. All the guys showed up with the 9 million PhDs and the sashes and all. So the big row of faculty people was more impressive than the students. That's a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
it
can be, and it's interesting. I didn't go to my graduate school, graduation. We finished in July, and the next graduation ceremony was in December. And by then, I didn't care.
But I want a picture of you.
I don't know if I would have gone in July either, but definitely not. What we did, because it was a cohorted program, and I went with the same 26 people went through this program all together. Is we after the last day of class. We rented the ballroom, the place where they have all the weddings and all that kind of stuff. We rented that out as a group. We all just kicked in, and just had a big blowout party. It was at the Marriott downtown, basically upstairs from the Billy Goat, which is where we ended up at one point.
There you go.
And And you know, and then we hired a DJ, and we had party and dancing and a big blowout. And I can detail that last weekend for you in very specifically, because it was still typewriter days. I had a final exam first thing Friday morning, and I had some final presentations to do on Friday, and then I had additional presentations due on Saturday, and a couple of papers due. So I went Friday, but we had a softball game on Friday night, making up a rainout. So I went and played softball right after class. I had not slept the night before, so I was pretty toasted for the ball game, but I still went 2 for 3. And then I went home and I started to type up the last paper, and I'm telling you, I couldn't get 3 words typed without screwing it up.
What would you pay for, I
said, well, the heck with it, I'll just set my alarm early, I'll get up, I'll type it up in the morning, which I did, and you know, I got some sleep. And then I typed it up in the morning, and as soon as I was done, it was like I remember vividly the feeling of typing that last sentence, and it is like, you know, all this steam letting out of me.
Well, Kevin, you probably kept the whiteout guys in business all by yourself, you know.
I wasn't too bad on that one, on that account, because I'm such a slow typist that, you know, that Notre Dame once had a halfback named Lee Becton. He was a good player, but he wasn't, you know, by major college football standards, was not fast. And I remember he pulled a hamstring once, and Lou Holtz said, he's not fast enough to pull a hamstring. Well, I wasn't fast enough to have typos, too. So I wasn't too bad in that regard. But as soon as I was done, I, of course... Now I'm ready to play, you know, and right. So I'm upstairs, I turn up the music, I'm blasting, you know, this is 6 o'clock in the morning because I still have to go downtown to school. And of course, I'm sitting there dancing around, and my wife comes out and says, what the hell are you doing? I am done. I will see you downtown later tonight at the end of the day when we go to the party. Yep. So,
Carl, what would you pay for Hal, Kevin, Larissa, and Russell all standing behind the podium and dueling PhD sashes and honorary degrees in their outfits?
Oh, I don't know. All right. I guess, you know, it'd be worth seeing.
Yeah. You know, well, they'd have their PhD sashes. I would have my merely master's degree sash. So,
I bet you could buy one.
Well, I probably could, but you know. Yeah, I'll go all in on Stolen Valor. Everybody loves that.
There you go. Yep.
Hey, we're talking about the employment number. We aren't yet, but we're going to. I started off the show talking about this CNBC thing. You know, we can't ever seem to get truth in whatever, Carl.
That is illegal, Chief.
Yeah. We can't say Trump threatens American people with tariffs. He says that's threatening. But if I had one more person that either on TV where I could throw something at the TV, or even a couple of people on the show will lob this one out there, people that I think are pretty intelligent. They'll say, well, look at the unemployment rate. Unemployment rate's still low. We're still doing fine. And yet, I look at this, and now that, you know, I blame you, Carl, or credit you, one or the other.
Uh-oh.
But last month, we had the amount of people that they counted as unemployed was actually down. Okay, but the people, we don't know what they're doing.
Right.
It was up 500,000 people. So if you actually took the total of people that aren't working, it's much higher. We have a couple of people, without going nameless, that lost their jobs that I know, like a year ago.
Right.
And, one of them is here most of the time in the office, because I said, you're not going to sit at home. Come here. You know, at least you got a computer. If you want to do any trading, you can. Or I don't want you sitting at home. I mean, I'm that good of a guy, I think. And but I know another one, too. It's been a year. One of them finally got a nibble. And there's no way that anybody in this place figured out. They've been looking for the whole year, but they're not being counted as looking anymore because they stopped getting their checks 6 months ago.
Right.
This whole combination mess between these two columns and people zeroing on the 7 million that are supposedly looking out of the 111 million that aren't working, It's so friggin' ignorant, I can't even go there. And yet, we'll hear it 10 times today, won't we? 100 times today.
Well, yeah, you're going to hear. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I think is especially annoying about what's going on with the employment side of things is you have a disconnect between the stuff that comes out in corporate earning reports and the data that's coming out from the BLS. Take a look at what was just announced yesterday. Okay, you have CloudStrike comes out and says they're basically whacking 20% of their or 15% or something of their staff. Cloudflare, I'm sorry. And these guys supposedly what they all say is we're doing this because of AI, okay? Which, by the way, is a complete load of crap. All right. If you take a look, the math on this does not math. All right, it just doesn't. What's really going on with most of these places, IBM, for example, and stuff like this? Yeah, they're firing people here in the United States, but they're hiring the job shop over in India. Because even though that guy is nowhere near as good, I need three of them to make up for the cost, to make up the output of one American, that's one software engineer here in America. They're $20,000 a year, and the guy over here is $250,000.
But
Chief, this is a serious issue. Okay?
Yes. Hey, before we go further into that, because I want to get further into that, the people like who just got laid off, CBOE just laid off 20% of their people.
Yeah.
And some of it, they laid off a guy that I know a little bit. I just know who he is. He goes downstairs for a cocktail once in a while. The guy's, I think he's 64.
Yeah.
And they're going to pay him. He's been there 24 years, so they're going to give him 2 weeks a year. So they're going to pay the guy for a year, essentially up to retirement age anyway. And I'm thinking, what is the insanity with that? The guy must do something when he's there. Wouldn't you rather pay him for the year than say we want you to retire at 65 or so?
Because the accounting for it is, they get to take that all as one hit. And so they accrue for it now, and it's off of their books for future for their next round of earnings.
Okay, but now,
Chief, yeah, that's exactly right. What Kevin's pointing.
Yeah, I get it,
exactly,
but it's still real money out of the same pot.
Well, I understand, but it's a gimmick from a standpoint of how your report looks when you present it to the street.
Okay, but now, for our purposes today, the guy's going to get a paycheck every 2 weeks for, let's say, a year.
Right.
Now, can he get unemployment? What is he counted as? He's still getting paid.
No, because he's getting paid. He's not actually unemployed.
Okay, so he's not, even though he's out, he's he thinks he's unemployed. He's not, and he's not going to be counted. He's still counted as employed?
Well, now, if he's not looking, he would not be counted as unemployed either, because remember that's, now if he's getting an unemployment check, then
I don't
does.
Think they gave him a lump sum. They just kept going to keep him on the payroll for a year.
Well, no, that's exactly right. And remember that's one of the issues with the BLS data, okay, is that if you're not on the roll, the unemployment rolls, you're not unemployed.
That's right, which is weird.
Right, which is effed, but, it is what it is. As long as the data remains consistent across time, comparisons can be made and they're valid. Okay, now you may you have to look in a different bucket, but this is one of the reasons that I always use the unadjusted numbers, and I look at the employment population ratio. That is the base number for the health of the economy from a standpoint of the employment side. All right, nothing else means a thing. The official unemployment number doesn't mean anything. What does matter is whether or not, on a rolling basis, adjusted for the change in non-institutional population, are the number of jobs going up or down?
Right. So this dude is going to be employed for a year, essentially.
He's drawing a check.
Okay.
So yeah. So I mean, and oh, by the way, that also helps him because presumably he's probably making pretty good dough, you know, being at the end of his career, right? So that also helps him because it goes into his Social Security counts. All right, so this counts as one of as you know, four more quarters of his earnings record, which, presuming that they're at the higher end of his historical range, bumps some of the lower ones that go into computing his benefit payments.
And he can go get another job and get paid twice, which would be nice.
He could go get another job. Yeah, because he's sitting around playing with himself. So if he chooses to instead to go earn some more money, yeah.
Well, because I mean, as we go through these numbers, I just want the listeners and myself, by the way, to know how all these definitions are, because nobody seems to care about the definitions. They just lob the number out there. I mean, it's,
well, of course not. And the other thing that goes along with this is that, as I've pointed out, for quite a while with regards to the market, good God, if you want to take a look at the absolute insanity, I mean, I did a column on this just a day or two ago. You look at, there's this whole thing blowing up. Fox News had an article on it. You know, all of a sudden, they finally noticed that McDonald's is now awfully effing expensive from a standpoint of a place to go get a bite to eat, right? Gee, you just figured that out? Okay, here's the cute part of this, and this goes to the competitive or lack thereof nature of our economy today. So a McDouble had been 99 cents, a buck, on the value menu forever, basically. Then here comes the crazy, right, back in 2020. All right. When all said and done, that same burger is now $2.50. All right?
Now, I get it.
The argument is that everyone raises is, well, you know, costs have gone up. Minimum wage laws, the cost of beef, costs have radically increased. I assure you they have not gone up by 150%, okay? And by the way, all I have to do to see the evidence of this is to look at McDonald's stock over the last 10 years, all right? The stock is up by a factor of 4, all right? It's 400% of where it was 10 years ago.
I'll bet the chairman's making 400% of what he was, too.
Oh, well, I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
But now here's the problem, Chief. Everywhere there's a McDonald's, there's a Checkers, a Burger King, a Wendy's, a something next door, right?
Right.
All right. If there was, this is all the proof, if we had an antitrust division that gave up F about the law, this is all the evidence you need to throw people in prison for 10 years. Because in any kind of competitive market, if I have a 45% operating margin, and McDonald's does, go look it up, someone's going to shoot at me. and if you think you're going to get away with a 45% operating margin if there's competition for more than 3 days, you got rocks in your head.
Well, you know, it's...
But somehow McDonald's has managed to do this over an extended period of time. And the only way they're doing it is everybody's raising prices in lockstep with each other, and that's illegal.
They are. And, you know, it's the guy you want to talk about on McDonald's, because the McDouble, I just had one this week because I was wandering around.
By the way, they suck. But
they do. But they went from being a dollar to being $2.50, but if you buy two of them, the second one's only a dollar.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
But my point here is not to go through their menu, but with all the little games going on in the menu, I don't want to be the guy doing the CPI on McDonald's.
Right.
Because I mean, the only guy who could do it is Russell. Because Russell, what does he get every morning? He gets a Egg McMuffin, a something, and a large coffee or something, like every morning.
Yeah.
For like 20 years. So he gets the same thing. So he can chart. But otherwise, how do you dodge the different value menus, and how do you even have any idea to put a number on it?
Well, Chief, one of the other things is, like, really, I mean, you want to talk about obscenities. So not down here, but up in Michigan and parts of Ohio and stuff, and also in Canada, you have Timmy Hortons.
Okay. Yeah.
When my mother was ill and passing, and then when I was doing all of the stuff with the estate, I was up there a lot. All right. And of course, I didn't have my fufu espresso machine with me. And I wanted a coffee and something to, you know, a bite in the morning. Okay, well, Timmy's was right there. Timmy's used to be a pretty decent place to go. You could go in there, you could get yourself a breakfast burrito and a coffee, and the whole thing would probably cost you $2.50. Okay, and I'd sit there doing whatever accounting work I was doing on the estate in the morning, you know, going through the books, whatever have you. And they had a nice little place you could sit and do all this. This was before the crazy, a couple of years before the crazy, because that's when my mom passed. All right. Sarah and I were up skiing this winter, and we happened to be up at Boyne. And there's a Timmy's in there. The two of us went in there and essentially got the same thing that I used to get during that time. And between the two of us, it was $10. And I think actually with the tax, it was like 12. I was like, what?
Well, the biggest benefactor of inflation is the government.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if they're public. I don't think they're publicly traded. They might be. But, you know, it's a Canadian company. All right, it's not an American firm. I was blown away by the price difference. Okay, there is no effing way that I would consider this to be
reasonable. You know how many? I have a friend and a client who works at McDonald's, and we had an adult beverage a few weeks ago, and she told me that if you were to take the amount of eggs that McDonald's goes through just in the U.S. of A., the eggs end-to-end would go all the way around the world.
Oh, yeah, I believe it.
But, you know, here's a kind of a phenomenon, and it's interesting, like you mentioned, how way back in the day when I was a kid, a long time ago, we'd drive. You know, we'd go to vacation in the summer. We went to Washington one year. We'd go to Sturgeon Bay most of the time. But, you know, there was no McDonald's. There was nothing like
right.
that. And there were some White Castles in Chicago, but that was about it. And so my mother's story was, I don't care what we eat, where we stop, but there better be a clean bathroom.
Right.
Which was a really hard thing to do, like on Route 66 or something. You know, the places were basically bleep holes, right? I mean, well, when Ray Kroc started the McDonald's, and he started to inspect places.
Oh, yeah.
He would walk into a McDonald's, he'd blow right by the counter and walk right into the men's room and the ladies' room. And if they weren't spotless, there was hell to pay. We used to go to Vegas all the time, right? And if you're waiting for the plane in the morning, they open up. You know, well, when I started going to give lectures, I'm actually flying home at like 7 in the morning or something. Well, the Burger King and the McDonald's were in the Las Vegas airport.
Right.
But when they pulled up the, you know, the cyclone fence, or we're going to call for it, the metal thing to where people could go line up all hungover, right? I wasn't, because I was speaking the night before. But the amount of people at the Burger King was 10 times the people at the McDonald's.
Oh,
if
yeah.
they're right next to each other. But if you drive down the street, you'll find that the McDonald's gets way more business because their people are way more efficient. They're way more pleasant. The bathrooms are cleaner. They're never out of something. The difference in performance is dramatic. Certainly in the morning it is, a couple times I stop. I mean, they're not even close. McDonald's is amazingly well run.
Oh, I'm just, all I'm pointing out is that there's no place on this planet in a competitive market where you have a 45% operating margin and you're not getting shot at.
Well, Carl, there's
nowhere on the planet.
There's
okay?
one. There was one on Route 83, and I went when I bought my truck. Right, I get off at where the hell I got off, but I'm going down LaGrange Road, like way the hell out south, and I go, I'll get myself a cup of coffee.
Yeah,
I'm driving away from the city, and I'm going, I can't get a cup of coffee because you can't just do a U-turn everywhere in a street. It's divided. Right. All the places. McDonald's, every one of them were all on the other side of the street.
Wrong side of the road.
Because people get their coffees coming in the morning.
Right.
And that's probably your highest profit item on the thing.
Well,
so,
sure.
As a matter of fact, on Route 83, there's a McDonald's on the west side of the street. It's been there for years. All of a sudden, I see them tear the place down and build one on the other side of the street. I mean, these guys have every spot that you could possibly be the best spot they've got.
Well, and you know, for I don't know if it's still true, but for years the shtick was Burger King did not have to do any actual market research. All they did was stick the store next to the McDonald's.
Well, without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because McDonald's was so good at site selection that, yeah, that you could see a McDonald's and look left and right, and you might or might not see a Burger King. On the other hand, if you saw a Burger King and then you looked left and right up the street within a couple of blocks,
there would be a McDonald's. Yeah.
For years and years, not one McDonald's ever closed. Now, you know, now there's so many of them, they do close, but the guess where the first one was that closed and the second one? Kevin, you should be able to know this.
Didn't they close the Displains one?
No,
it was like the first one, wasn't it?
The first one that closed, and you can still, if you look close, you can still see the slab of concrete, was near Cabrini Green, because the thing got robbed constantly.
Oh, there you go.
And the second was, they had a, God, this has to be 50 years ago, Kevin, maybe 40. There was one where they had a big shooting in L.A., so they closed that one. Because so many people died there, they closed it. Like, it's the same thing that happened again. But anyway,
those areas should be really proud that they were the only ones that could force McDonald's to close a restaurant.
There you go.
My stepfather, the guy who left his firm, he was a chairman, he and a few of his buddies, I think they bought 7 or 8 McDonald's in, like, Nebraska or someplace. They were listed on the New York Stock Exchange, just the 7 or 8 McDonald's. That's how well they were doing on the interstates. That's unbelievable when you think about it. So what are we looking at these? To get back to, we were bouncing back and forth here from good stories and why some companies do well. The gentleman I'm talking about, he's been out of work a year. He was on the dole for, what are you, you're not 6 months anymore, you're 3 months unless the federal, anyway, so I think he was on the dole for 3-4 months. And so now, where was he counted along the way? When he was still getting the check from the state, he's considered unemployed and looking, right? And as soon as his check stopped, even though he's still looking and now found something, thankfully, he was not considered looking for the last 6 months, correct?
Yeah, so that's at the point that the check stops. I mean, the BLS is, now again, it depends on the survey we're talking about, okay? But the primary unemployment number comes off the unemployed line, and that is people who are still getting a check.
And when the employment situation gets bad enough to where the federal government says we're going to extend it 12 weeks,
that increases that number.
Because now the Fed sends that money to the state for the extra 12 weeks, correct?
Well, generally, yes. Now, the thing is that, so one of the, you know, a lot of people talk about welfare and, you know, this should not happen and da-da-da-da-da, whatever. The reality is that unemployment is not, at least the general one, is not welfare, because every employer pays a tax. And again, there's two of them. There's FUTA, federal unemployment tax, and then there's SUTA, which is the state version of it. So, and those rates depend on how often you fire people. There is a cap on them. But if you're like I was, where I fired liberally whenever I felt it was appropriate, you rather quickly hit the cap, because the look back on it is pretty, is pretty extensive. But that's it was always funny, because there were some people that apparently had bounced from place to place, getting fired a bunch of times, I assume, which is why they knew this. And they'd be like, well, you know, your rate's going to go up. No, it's not. It was capped 2.5 years ago.
Well, that's why if you want to be, the process here, help me here where I'm wrong, Carl. The process is, if you fire somebody or lay somebody off, and they go get unemployment, you can challenge it if it's for cause.
Correct. It depends on, now it depends on where you are, though, because when, now I don't, I can't speak to other states. I can only tell you what it was like in Chicago. Okay, we lost those challenges when somebody didn't show up because they just decided they weren't going to show up for work, and we had the time cards to prove it.
Well, the firms here that are really big on challenging all this, they're pretty good at it because whenever
I used to fight them all the time, Chief, and we always lost.
Well, what I'm saying is, to win, you have to be essentially an ass the whole way, where every review, no matter what, if I'm going to review you for Stocks and Jocks, which I never would because, God, I love having you on, but I would have to say, wow, you remember that? Remember that show in January? You were 5 minutes late getting on, which of course weren't. You have to absolutely document crappy stuff somebody's done, even if it's kind of not true. So the day that you fire them, you say, it's the last straw. I couldn't handle it. By the way, here's the record of all the different times the guy was 3 seconds late from getting back from lunch or this, that, and the other thing. So when you go down to fight this unemployment, then you can say, here's why we fired him. It was for cause. Otherwise, if you just fire somebody and have 15 good reviews in a row, you're not going to win.
But Chief, I'm telling you, in Illinois, and again, I don't know if it's changed, okay, because, you know, my experience with this was in the 1990s, okay? I canned a guy because I caught him drinking in the bathroom, and he managed to get unemployment.
Really? Wow.
I caught him with a hip flask, taking a drink from it. Okay. And it was just dumb luck. I went in there to take a leak, and there he was.
Yeah, I mean,
drinking on the job, and nope, he got unemployment. He got canned. He filed for unemployment, and he turns around, you know, that wasn't for cause. I'm like, excuse me?
Okay, yeah. So let's work this thing. I mean, the one that I'm familiar with right now, the recent one, is the SIBO laying these people off. Now, that happened, where are we? We're May. Well, it's going to be 8th tomorrow. So this happened, I'm going to say, last week, maybe some the week before.
Yeah.
Now, these guys are still getting paid. I think most of them, or at least getting some severance. Even if you're there 3 years, you're going to get 6 weeks. So none of that is in today's numbers. Well, when does that hit any place?
So those events, however they get accounted for, has to come up on the next sample week. So it would be in this coming month's numbers because the sample week is the third week of the month. So the third week of May is after the event. It's the next one after the event. So it would be in there.
Right. So the guy who has been there 2 years, and he got 4 weeks. That takes you to the middle of June. So he's going to be in the July numbers. If he's 6 weeks, he'll be in the August numbers. I mean, it's going to piggy move out here, right?
Right. It's when the effective date of the actual separation where he's unemployed and not drawing a check, which, you know, if I tell you I'm firing you in September, by the way, I'm paying you until then, which is essentially what that sort of a thing is, right? That's when that would show up.
Well, when you do that, and we've never had to do that, if somebody has only been there 2 years and they're getting 4 weeks' pay, it's at some level, and I'm asking procedurally here with, maybe they use ADP or whatever they use. At some level, do you just give the guy the 4 week check? I mean, obviously, if you're there for a whole year, you're probably going to keep him on the payroll. But if it might be a different pot, like you and Kevin are talking about. But is there some level where the guy's been there 1 year where you just say, here's your 2 weeks, get out of here?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's, well, there's.
No, that guy would be on, he'd be counted next month then because he's gone.
He's gone. Absolutely. Right. And then the other thing that goes along with that is that by law, accrued but untaken things that, you know, for example, if I've got vacation time accrued, okay, that has to be paid out on the final check.
Okay.
So if there are things that are real money, okay, that I have not consumed, but I'm entitled to them as a result of my employment. So, I mean, we had situations like that where we had somebody that either quit or, you know, they got canned. And, you know, they'd been in a couple of years, and they had accrued vacation time. that was theirs. Okay, if you get paid 2 weeks vacation a year, and you know you're 6 months into the year, that's money, and that has to be paid out if you quit in the middle of the year. It's yours. You can't now whether or not you could legally craft that policy in such a way that that's forfeit in that situation, I don't know. But I mean, maybe there's ways to do it, but you know, we never tried to do that. It was if you had it accrued, we followed the law, you got paid when you left. It didn't matter what the reason was, it was on your check.
Hey, we've got a little bit of time here before we do these numbers, and we still have Professor Kevin. You mind if we shift for 10 minutes? Kevin, I opened up the conversation a little bit with Lou late yesterday. But the state of Indiana now has followed, I guess, Illinois and a few others, in somehow allowing, I don't know how you can not allow it, but somehow now have officially allowed NIL to drive its way into the high schools in terms of...
Oh, that's nice.
In terms of kids being able to market themselves and do kinds of stuff. What does that do in terms of a law, Kevin? And what and the thing Lou brought up, like I said, it was very end of his time, he had a dash, but... Literally, he was going jogging. The kid can't really sign a contract. Okay, so if they sign a contract with, say, Nike, and part of the contract says you got to go to a Nike school. I don't know what they say, but I'm assuming that's why Nike does it. You got to go to a Nike school. And the kid says when he's 18, I'm not going to a Nike school. You can't really hold the old man and the kid. Start where you want to start, Kevin. What do you think, what difference does it make that the state, A, says that, and B, what does it all mean? Alfie, what was that the song?
Well, first of all, any contract they sign with a minor is not enforceable. Lou said that yesterday. And so, remember, you guys are old enough, do you remember the Columbia Record Club?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They used to send out this...
Those were fun.
Yeah. They used to send out this... Here for 1 cent or 99 cents or something like that, you join the Columbia Record Club, you get six albums right away, and then you have to buy one every month, and they would send you the one every month, and you were supposed to pay for it. You know, they'd send it to you with a bill, and
right.
So some people did that, but there was no enforcement, and you know, everybody I knew said, yeah, I'll take it, I'm not going to pay the bill. They'll give up on me after a few months, and I'll have all these free albums. So that's the kind of deal anybody would be striking when working on an NIL deal with a high school student. Now, they might try to do something with the family or with the parents, but I really have a hard time believing that that's going to happen. So that's number one. Now, Lou did offer, and I think it's actually already here, that you're going to start seeing some schools that are just built around athletics and doing athletic development. And in fact, those already exist. IMG Academy in Florida is famous for that. They're well known.
Hey Kevin, one of the kids who just got drafted first round at Ohio State, he went 2 years to Marist, and I think he went to IMG for his second 2 years. Is that?
Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah.
And they have football and basketball and all that. So that you know, and they hire great coaches and lots of coaches. So all of that is there. But you know, there's all kinds of other prep schools that have been doing this for a long time. Right near, you know, between you and me, it's in Porter County in Indiana, is La Lumiere High School. And La Lumiere, Notre Dame is recruited from there. I'm trying to think of J.J. Starling he played back when Bray was there. Starling went to La Lumiere, but he was from New York. And Jalen Harrelson, who just played for them, and then he's transferring out. But Jalen Harrelson is from Anderson, Indiana. He went to La Lumiere up here, and then they have two others who went to La Lumiere. And so did Nielle Ivey's kid when she took the job in Tennessee. He went to to what would be affectionately referred to as Lalu. So there's that. But there have been a lot of other prep schools that have been doing this for a long time, where they, you know, their focus was on the people who weren't eligible. They didn't have the academic requirements to get a college scholarship. If you remember some of that that era of college, when you had to have a certain grade level to get in, so there were a bunch of prep schools that were built around that concept, and they you know, they would take kids from all over the country. So I think, you know, what Lou was talking about, what he expects to emerge, is already here. It's just going to take. It may become more ubiquitous. It might it might take, you know, some different twists and turns. I think, if I remember right, Modest Brazelis on the Bears is a, or on the Bears, on the Bulls, is an example of a guy who is a Chicago area kid, went to Chicago area high school, and he might have gone to IMG as well, and then from there he got went into the G League for a year, and then the Bulls drafted him. So you're going to see these alternate paths, just because, you know, the market is shifting towards saying, you know, we don't care as much about the academics. It's nice if you want to do that. And, you know, I don't think IMG shorts people on their education, but it's nice if you want to do that, but that's not our reason for being. Our reason for being is to develop people for the athletics.
Well, we've had guests on the show, and maybe we'll again, although his firm doesn't really want him to come on here anymore, but I'll just say Tom used to tutor kids in Florida. He grew up in Florida, that were in high school, but, you know, were trying to make sure they graduated, and they were really good ball players. And this is before any of this started, but money was still being passed around. And, you know, once in a while, he'd tutor a kid, and all of a sudden the uncle, who didn't have a pot to pee in, shows up in a brand new F-150. But he said the I mean, this probably was coming from an alumnus. He said, but the threat was always there, that if the kid said, screw it, I'm going to Southern Cal, somebody's might be missing a kneecap. I'm not saying that. So, you know,
oh,
I'm
no,
not,
I,
I'm not,
I've heard tale of that, too, from some of the people I know who are involved in college sports media, where they've talked about somebody who, you know, was back in the days when nobody was getting paid above board, that they got their deal to go to choose a school, only to let's say only to change their mind and be told, you don't want to screw with the people who are behind your payments.
But I don't know that they're going to run around with a crowbar, but I don't see Under Armour courting some kid in basketball through high school with the idea that he's going to go to Notre Dame or another Under Armour school and say, screw you guys, I'm going to Oregon and for a Nike school. I mean, I don't think... but then again, Kevin, you know...
I think there's a certain amount of... You know, in that scenario, I think there's a certain amount of risk that they're willing to accept, that they're going to lose some along the way. But, you know, that part of the model worries me a lot less than when the shady people get involved.
Well, from a standpoint of the school, and Carl, we're going to can this in 2 minutes because then we're going to go to break early, but the Irish, our school, just had a kid that they, I'm going to say, wined and dined all the way through high school on the basketball team. Kid's real good. And now I know firsthand, well, I don't know firsthand, but I know somebody who's really involved with a Catholic school here in Chicago, and evidently got some kid who's a freshman on their team that, if you go watch practice, all you do is see that kid, right? You know, and you have people like that. All of a sudden, maybe our school, Kevin, I know a couple other are joining them, are already all over this kid. Now, my buddy Bill Murphy, colleges were over his granddaughter when she was in eighth grade, because she's already a standout lacrosse player. Now, I never dreamed of a college knowing anybody in eighth grade when in our era, but evidently they do now. So the Irish are now, along with a couple other schools, giving this kid everything from freshman year in. Hey, if your parents are anywhere in South Bend, stop by. Even though, you know, it's not an official visit, but somehow it's something. You know, we'll show them the place, we'll do lunch. Or By the way, any amount of camps you want to go every summer, you know, we'll comp the camp. So there's already this payment thing for this kid who's a freshman. Now, the same thing I assume they did with the other kid in Indiana who, after freshman year, said go pound sand and left. So I'm like, are we idiots by continuing to do this, or what are we doing here?
Are we idiots? The answer is unequivocally yes. but I think, you know, regular listeners understand that. I would say, you know, don't get too hung up on that, and just, you know, I think it's more along the lines of the business model's changing. This is no different than any other industry where they have start to get some kind of sea change in. It could be a technology shift. It could be, it could be new competition. There's all kinds of reasons, and it starts to reshape the industry. We see that this industry is no different. It's just morphing into something, and sometimes I think I have a grip on what that's going to be, and other times I think I have no clue on what that's going to be, but it's going to be something else. Well, and I would just say sit back and watch it. If you're trying to evaluate the status quo as it is today, it's not going to make any sense, because we're not doing what we're ultimately going to be doing. This may look a lot like this may switch into something that resembles the European club setup, but remember, there's a whole lot of money tied up in college athletics, a whole lot of bureaucracy, and a whole, you know, and none of that is going to give, it's not going to give up its space easily, because power doesn't do that. It goes away grudgingly if it's going to go away at all, but it's going to be something different, and I don't know what that's going to be.
Well, maybe next Friday, if Carl comes on a little earlier like he did today, let's talk about the people toll. I mean, somebody who's 15, or in my buddy's case, his granddaughter, God, what are you in eighth grade? You're 14? I don't know. I think you are. Is this too early for this? I mean, it may not be a little. I mean, I guess I don't have a problem with going to see a movie and seeing the women and the men in there being unusually good looking, okay, and essentially getting paid for it. Now there's acting talent too, but in general, you're not some ug, either a guy or a girl, getting a big movie contract. I get that part, but I don't want it down to 14-year-olds running around in bikinis getting paid for beauty pageants. I don't get the right to say that, but that's
just creepy. So now you're saying that, you know, you're making an equivalence with.
Oh, no, I'm not equivalence. I'm saying at some level, I don't want a 14-year-old sitting there getting bid for it.
I don't think you're wrong, but Tom, young athletes have been on the athletic circuit for a long time. I remember going to a college softball game and sitting with the Louisville parents. It was like the Big East tournament back in those days, and sitting with the Louisville parents and talking to them, because their daughters have been on the road since they were in junior high.
Well, the whole travel team thing is about that.
That's exactly it. And so it's not new. It's just people have been identifying the young athletes. And heck, other countries, they've been doing that for a long time. You know, in some cases, you know, we've always talked about the Russian gymnasts. They identify them very young, and they would sort of get. Now, that's an extreme approach to it, but this is not new.
I mean, I get that part, but and I also think that when you're down to 17, okay, you become a man or a woman earlier. 16, but if you're down to 12. There's some limit. I don't know what the limit is, but I mean, we creep it back a year over year, and I use the term creep intentionally.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to go to break here and come back with these numbers.
I got to listen to the report.
And let's tee this up again,
Carl,
next Friday.
Carl, real quickly, just something for after the break. Trump was talking earlier this week about how they're not padding the employment numbers with specifically with government hires. Said, you know, they've been curtailing government hires instead of increasing them. And to what degree is that a factor in any of this?
It's there.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious as to, you know, if it was full of crap or not on this.
Well, if they didn't have the health care section, they'd really be screwed.
All right.
All right, we got SP Futures up 38, NASDAQ Futures up 219. We'll go for break for like 1 second, Ricky, and then come right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks and Jocks. Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Money. Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. Carl, what number do you have? I've got the household survey here. You got the other one yet?
I got 115. 37,000 in healthcare. Gee, go figure. The screwing of Americans continues. However, this is pretty punky, and I'm just picking up the data from the household survey. And
that's what I'm looking at. But I'm looking at the adjusted one. So go ahead.
Well, you always are, but you know that's the way it goes, Chief.
I'm looking at the one everybody else looks at, which I count on you to tell me why it's wrong. I mean,
well, yeah, you look at the one that the CNBS people, you know, all the BS that's fit to print put up there, right? The unadjusted number is plus 17. That's not so good, right?
Well, the dummy thing I'm looking at shows 220,000 people less working, 190,000 people, and we don't know what they're doing, and 100,000 more people unemployed. So from this, looking at this, it sucks.
Well, yeah, and here's all right. So the employment population ratio is flat month over month. It's still 59.2.
All right, this one's got it 59.1. So this is worse.
Okay. Well, all right. But the net gain here's the problem. It's a big one. The net gain is 17,000. Okay, not 115 or whatever the establishment. The net gain on the household unadjusted is 17,000 plus 17. However, the employment, remember, the non-institutional civilian population keeps going up. Now, we have a demographic disaster inbound. However, it's not here yet because it takes 20 years to grow children, roughly, from the time you think about growing one to when it happens. But the 12-month run rate is now down to negative 3.02 million. Last month, it was 2.483 neg. Okay, now that is a monster drop.
Well, there's two ratios here. I mean, obviously there's two, but...
By the way, that's the worst. That is the worst number in that series for all the way back to November.
Well, the 59.1 of people who that are employed percentage is the worst since COVID. I mean, if you go back before COVID, it never was that low. Actually, no, in 2012 it was that low.
Yeah, it was back in the middle of the so-called recovery from the kaboom boom. Yeah,
but here, this is interesting. There's the two ratios here, and I keep harping on the idea that you know, somebody's going to come out and say the unemployment rate is unchanged, so everything's fine. I mean, that's going to probably already happen already. Ten
places.
But there's two ratios here. One is if you go back to like 2016 or 15, there's a ratio of the amount of people that are working like for any reason or not working for any reason, and that is what's dropping because people keep going and this back column, it's this constant, right. This interplay between official unemployed and unofficial unemployed. The fact is that the total number there is keeping going up every month.
Well, that's
a problem.
Right, and here's the thing: the not in labor force number is up 1.2 million this month. 104,756 to 105,406.
Okay, the adjusted is 104.959.
Yeah, well, they can bite me because I don't use their number. But I don't use the adjusted numbers, and you know, and we've talked about why, you know, like forever, because there's knob twisting going on in there, and I prefer not to see the knobs.
Well, there's I've got 2.7 million more people, and we don't know what they're doing column than last year.
Yeah,
200,000 more unemployed, and I've actually got less people employed. That's not good.
Yes, and that's exactly now, what you have. Now, here's right, the other
quick question before you do something more intelligent than I'm asking. If I go back to last April, on the dummy adjusted page,
right?
Do all those adjustments come out or somehow not?
Well, they're supposed to.
I know that, but I'm asking, are they really?
I don't know, because, like I said, I don't track them on my own spreadsheet. But, I mean, are they supposed to? Yeah, I mean, because, you know, Christmas comes the same time every year, right?
All right, well, if those are correct, or let's assume they are, last April we had 163,898 working. Now we've got 162,622 working. Okay, so how are we getting this 100,000 a month being employed? I have no idea. We had 7.1 million unemployed. Now we've got almost 7.4. We had 102 million. We don't know what they're doing. And now we got 105. So tell me this is a good year.
And yes, but it's a good year according to the Trump administration.
Yeah.
By the way, it's also a good year according to the futures, which are up, you know, not skyrocket up, but they're green.
They're up percent a day, at least a percent a day.
They're up, yep. And you know, and the Nasdaq's up a full percent. The Nasdaq futures, you know. By the way, here's another interesting nasty little number inside that set of data tables. A6. Employment status of civilian population by sex, age, and disability status, not seasonally adjusted, because there's no SA one on that one. It's NSA. People with a disability, April, this is year over year, because they don't give it to you month by month. April 25 to April 26, 34778 to 36615. So that's 1.9 million, 1.8-ish. Okay. How about people with no disability? This is non-institutional population. That number's down by about 100,000. So the we're screwed group in the workforce. We're not even counting who's actually working, who's employed. We're counting just those non-institutional working age population. By the way, their definition of disability is at least one of the following conditions: deaf or difficulty hearing, blind or has difficulty seeing even with glasses, serious difficulty concentrating, remembering, making decisions because of a physical, mental, or emotional condition, serious difficulty walking or climbing stairs, difficulty dressing or bathing, doing errands such as visiting a doctor or shopping. That's the definition. So you have to be somewhat seriously compromised and screwed from a standpoint of doing normal things in your life in order to be on that list. And the number of able-bodied, as in people don't have one of those things, among the non-institutional working-age population is going down. That does not bode well for the economy. It does not bode well for the employment population at all. And the civilian labor force, which, by the way, doesn't include the NILF numbers, okay, right, also down from 162,227 to 169,64 among not disabled. And civilian labor force among disabled is, of course, up because, you know, the numbers have to add, right? So, yeah. And yet we say, yeah, there's really no problem here. The employee
there's
numbers,
no problem as long as the market goes up and everybody's wealth increases.
Yeah, but you
it's
know,
not
employed,
everybody.
But the number of employed people, not only the number of non-institutional population people without a disability is going down, the number of employed people without a disability is also going down. Not in labor force, of course, is rising across both those categories, as you'd expect, because it is in the gross number too, right?
If you're in that, I'll say the group that you're maybe you've got a good salary, but clearly you've, you know, maybe somebody left you investments or you made them yourself.
Yeah.
They're going up faster. I mean, you know, if I knew the person and I had 10 water balloons, a guy who has 5,000 shares of Chevron bitching at the gas prices, I want to land him with a water balloon. I
mean, no, really?
Yeah. But, you know, this, obviously people know that this is my livelihood. I like that when the market does this stuff, but I'm also very wary of when it goes down and people borrow too much, how bad it can be. Now, so my firm, my brother and I firm, we don't have anybody like that. So that is margined to the max. And
right.
I mean, I can't.
There's a lot of people that
yeah,
are out there.
I can't think of a day when somebody called up and said, you know, buy me 1,000 shares of Walmart. What's the minimum I could send you? That's just not our business. But I also know it's a lot of other people's business. And, oh, by the way, it's very, very lucrative because you make the money on the interest, even though you're telling the goofball that it's free commission. Well, first of all, you sold the order flow, and now you're charging interest out the ass. So, and I understand the business more than people think I do. But I don't – this – I mean, we went through – I don't know if you listened yesterday. I went through with actually Lou a little bit, but mostly with Larissa on Wednesday. These gross numbers and the person who always – I don't know, I shouldn't – say this because she's probably a very nice lady, but she grates the hell out of me with her voice. Is Stephanie Link? She's on CNBC all the time, and I don't. Although she had a big fight with my buddy Dr. J one day in the air, which I didn't like. But anywho, she constantly with this strident voice is the consumer is healthy, the consumer is this, the consumer that. Now Larissa is a PhD professor talking about, and she gives classes and people and doing budgeting for stuff and.
Right.
Consumer stuff. I mean, Larissa knows her bleep.
Well, it's what she does.
Yeah.
Right.
And she would, I mean, she was, so I was goading her a little bit, but she basically said, look, and she's got kids too, so she's not a housewife, she's a working mother. And she goes, yeah, you could say, if you're an idiot, she didn't say that, I added to it, she would never say that, but I will. She goes, if I go and get $40 more for gas or 20 or whatever it is, and I'm paying more for this, and my rent went up. It means, and we've stopped going to breakfast because I'm not paying, you know, $60 for breakfast for three of us. And you know, we go out for a pizza. Pizza's cheaper, and we get up for dinner. Plus, we like pizza better. You know, she goes, "Well, we're cutting back." So she said, on a gross number sort of thing, I'm spending probably as much or more as I did last year. Now, it's on different stuff because I've had to cut back on some of the things we like because I actually do a budget because that's what I teach kids to do because it also blends into their business. If you're going to start up a business, do a budget. I mean, it all kind of fits together. And she goes, and if somebody sprains an ankle and we're at the emergency room or something, I'm probably putting that on a credit card. So if you're a gross number person like somebody on TV is or people on TV are, you can say that I, Larissa, have spent more than I did last year. You could be foolish enough to jump to the conclusion that means that the consumer is strong.
Right.
That's not the conclusion. I'm forced to spend everything that I'm making, even if it's 2 or 3% more. The statistics look good, but I'm in worse shape, and I might have some on my credit card that I didn't want. She goes, how the hell can you tell me I'm healthy? But
well,
I'm strong.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting in here, and this got picked up in the report, which I'm a little surprised by, is that hours worked for the information sector is down this month. Now that's you know, there's people, you've seen the layoff notices, right, within these companies that have been reporting earnings.
Carl, what percentage of people, I mean, again...
By the way, if they offshored your job to Pajit Land over in India, you don't show up in the data anymore because you're not in the U.S. The job's not in the U.S.
But I had just a little bit of an aside, which I shouldn't do, but I will anyway. I had somebody, I got one of these Costco Citigroup cards, right?
Yeah.
I've been at Costco forever. Well, somehow or another, they text me and they find me and they go, this $90 charge, is this you? And I said, no. All right, tear up your card. We're sending another card. We'll give you a new Costco number, the whole bit. Oh, yeah, fine. But they were good enough to catch it. You know, and they didn't charge me. So that part's cool. So then I get the thing, and I call the number to redo your card, right?
Right.
And there's this nice lady on there. I don't know where else she's from, Carl. I could not understand a word she was saying. I kept trying. And I'm halfway decent. What if I'm Hispanic or from a neighborhood where... What if I didn't have a master's degree? I can't understand her. How the hell is anybody else?
Chief, this that's been an issue for a very long time, but this has accelerated a lot. This is also part of the whole H1 thing. Disney infamously forced all their entire IT department 15 years ago to train all of their H1 replacements and then fired them. That, by the way, is wildly illegal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? But nobody got spanked for it. No one went to jail.
Nobody ever will.
And no one ever will. Yeah. And the thing, this is all, I mean, I get it. Capitalism is all about the pursuit of profit, right? I mean, that's, why you go into business.
Okay, all right.
No, why you go into business? You go into business to make a profit, all right?
We were listening earlier. Kevin and I were jousting and... By the way, I'm going to wind around here to a spot where you called this a year ago, and I like to give you kudos. Kevin was talking about, I forgot, in an early part of the show, defining how something happened. I said, no, Kevin, that's essentially an F paper if it's not a competitive business. And you, on the one hand, said when Capital One was going to buy Discover.
Yep.
You said, there's four people that process cards now. We're going to be down to three.
Yep.
And now, this lady from Citigroup, if there were 15 other places I could go for a credit card processing-wise, I don't know if she's a Citigroup employee or whether she's a Visa employee, but if you and I had a business and every time somebody called up, like Commonwealth Edison, and a person, the experience was not so good. If you're in my business, you pick up the phone and you call any other brokerage firm that's out there and you get a new guy. Well, you can't do that with Commonwealth Edison. You almost hit a point now where you can't do it with Visa or MasterCard or American. Well, American Express is actually still pretty good. But having you're the only one who said, wait a minute, we don't want the other guys out. But now they're out. So, unfortunately, you're not in the antitrust department. That should have been a no.
Unfortunately, I'm not there. The number of people that are now, Spirit Airlines just blew up, right? The number of people that are attacking the folks who said, "Oh no, you're not going to take all three of the, the JetBlue, the Allegiant, and the Spirits and roll them all up into one." That's a problem, which. They did say, right? And now Spirit goes kaboom, and they're like, "Oh, you SOB!" They failed. They wouldn't have failed if they did this.
Well, United American are sniffing.
To
join themselves.
But here comes the political, the political sniping over that. Oh, these people lost their jobs. They shouldn't have lost their jobs. Actually, that's false. When you do a crappy job, and by the way, my daughter flew on Spirit exactly once. All right, she's a little more cares about the cost than I am. Right? I mean, go figure. A little younger, a little less dough. She said never again. Well, she'll pay the extra $50. The experience was that miserable.
Well, one of my buddies get a load of this. These guys, I'll show you pictures of this, Carl. You'll die laughing. But they're in this big German society here where they have shooting. They do air rifles and air pistols.
Yeah,
I didn't even know there was such a thing. But they're in this. It is so German that when they have their big celebration at the end of the year, everybody wears all these costumes with all their shooting patches and stuff on them. It's the most bizarre. Anyway, well, they're having a shooting contest down in Florida. So he decides to go on Spirit because the fees, the tickets are cheap. Well, the same phenomenon Audrey, you know, my significant other comes on Monday, found out what's with Southwest. Maybe not as bad. So he goes on there and he gets his round trip ticket. Say it's $150 one way. And he goes, well, that's pretty cool. Well, then I think...
Except it's not.
Well, but then to get a seat that had some leg room was another 100.
Right.
And the bag for his air pistol or whatever he brought with, you know, you kind of check that, was like another 70. He goes, the seat and the thing was more than the ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so...
Well, that's the sort of bait-and-switch nonsense. You know, that's what got Ticketmaster in so much trouble.
I think Southwest, right? Southwest is the same way now.
Oh, Southwest pulls the same crap. Yeah, but it's gotten... Since the whole 9/11 fiasco, I call the TSA the sexual assault, okay? And I've said it on the air enough times and said it to their faces enough times that I'm probably on, you know, four different lists, right, as a result. Yeah. But, you know, by God, if you're going to grope me, I ought to be able to choose the sex of the person that does it.
Yeah.
At least, all right, at a minimum. And whatever. But... The experience has become so ridiculously miserable, and not all of it is the TSA. A lot of it's the airlines themselves. You know, oh, we could take another half inch off the seat pitch, right? And it's stuff like this. And I'm not, you know, I'm not 6'4" or something like that, but I am 5'11". I'm not overweight. I fit into the, you know, the width of the seat. But by God, I'm packed in an effing sardine can.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine me at 6'4"?
Yeah, I mean it's insane, and I'm not large. If I was large, it would be 100 times worse. And so it's just there is a point at which I say, you know what, that's absolute crap. And then you have every person that is large screaming and hollering how it's unfair that they have to buy two seats. Well, guess what? Oh, by the way, we're going to sue and we're going to do this. Excuse me, if I've got to pay another $50. To check a bag up to 50 pounds, and you weigh an extra 50 pounds, how come you don't pay the extra $50?
Well, there's some point at the, I'm going to shock you here. I'm surprised you don't come up with this one when you talked about them scrunching the seats. I think you probably know, and maybe some of the listeners know, that whenever a new plane gets certified, one of the tests that has to be run is you have to put a person in every seat.
Yeah, and then they have to get out.
And there has to be a drill.
Yeah.
They all have to be able to get out in, is it 2.5 minutes?
It's pretty tight.
It's pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that every plane now...
No way would they
pass. No longer has the configuration at which that test was run. And you could run... You could make the airlines, by moving the seats closer together... If they can't pass the test, you give them a $1 billion fine and you make them go back to the old configuration. Well, now, how big of a prick would I be if I did that?
Well, Chief, no, I'd go even further. I'd make them run the test with all 300-pound passengers.
Well.
And if they can't pass it, then I'd force them out.
Well, the seats really haven't gotten any... No,
that's not the problem. The problem is, this is a legitimate test because it's a life safety issue, okay, if there's a problem.
Well,
right?
You know, for some reason, that's the reason. Now, you should know this. Every Boeing narrow-bodied plane is built on the same tooling, that the 707 was.
Right.
So the 707, 727, 757, and 737 are all the exact same width. I think it's like 11 feet. 8.5 inches or something. Now the Airbus is actually like 8 inches wider.
Yeah.
So the aisle's a little wider, and every one of the seats is probably 3/4 to 1 inch wider. So an Airbus actually has a little more room. That's why
a little bit.
That's why the flight attendants would rather go on an airline Airbus, because when you bring the cart down the aisle, you're not nailing everybody in the elbow and getting everybody pissed off. You got a little more room. So, I mean, it's not like these people don't know this. I mean, duh.
Well, of course they know it, yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you could do if you were concerned about it, but we're not.
Yeah, they're not. They don't care.
I mean, the idea that during COVID, they got Harvard University, and when Trump goes after him, I mean, I don't think he should, but on the back of my mind, they did the survey. Remember the study that said that you were because of the... HVAC system on a plane, you were better off on a plane than you were walking down the street with COVID. And I'm sitting there going, Harvard couldn't possibly have published this without somebody looking at it and saying, what is this crap?
Oh, Chief, nobody pays any attention to anything that makes any sense or doesn't make sense anymore. It's stupid. It's just stupid.
But you see it when you have stuff. I mean, I'll read this thing this morning that just got me frosted. And if you ask anybody from the right, they'll tell you CNBC is a left wing rag, you know, which it,
oh yeah, okay, whatever.
You know, and yet they will put this headline out there. Trump threatens EU with much higher tariffs if no trade deal signed by new deadline. The thing ought to read, Trump threatens American consumers with higher tariffs if EU doesn't agree with him. That's really what it's really what it ought to say, right?
But it doesn't.
No.
Does it? No.
And now today, everybody's going to be saying how great this labor report is because the unemployment rate's steady at 4.3. How many times are you going to hear it today? 100?
Well, I don't know, but I tell you what, the market seems to be sort of figuring out that maybe that wasn't so wonderful. That spike has come back off.
Well, we're still up 244 in the NASDAQ.
Okay, but we were up that before the report came
right.
out.
Okay, but right. yesterday we were up pushing 300, and it actually went down and finished up a little bit. I mean, any kind of a sell-off of the rally is now a buy the dip. I don't want to go through it again because it's so disgusting to look at it. Do you how many more times are you going to see traders optimistic about Iran deal when we're 10% higher than before the war started?
When
does that headline get old?
Well, okay, when's this headline get old? So, you know, the other night you had that futures spike that appeared to be out of nowhere, right? In the middle of the night, 3 a.m. All right, I woke up, I turned on my computer, and I'm like, where the hell did that come from? So I went looking around, you know, what the F is going on here? All right, well, then I go pull a little time in sales, you know, that nasty little thing, because I can do this look back on my console. And I go look at this, and by God, somebody put about a half a billion dollars worth of oil short futures bets out there. And 10 minutes after this happens, 10 minutes after this bet's placed, there's a large spike up in the ES and a large spike down in QM.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, this futures trade is worth an extra $100 million, roughly. Okay, I mean, this is just back of the envelope. I didn't actually get the calculator out and do it to the penny, but it was close enough. And the thing is, this is in the middle of the night when the volume in all these things is small enough that, you know, the move is wildly exaggerated. Oh, yeah. Just because
how would you
right?
like to be trading and making a market in the middle of the night?
Well, I'm saying you clear the entire bid offer stack when you do things like that, right? I mean, you gap you gap over the top of
Where is a standing order even held at night, for God's sake?
Well, hey, futures are open. But I don't know if you remember this. I've talked about it on the show before. A number of years ago, I think it was the 4th of July holiday, I was sitting there watching, because I was doing a little bit of trading in the futures, and I saw the infamous spoofing thing that was going on at the time show up in such a way that was, and it was ridiculously easy to identify because there was nothing in the market at the time, right? So seeing it was really easy, and I put up a video about it. Made a video, I dropped it on YouTube, and said, this is very clearly illegal. This is not intended to execute. You're trying to bait people. Hey, that's against the law.
Did you write this headline? Dop 150 points is jobs report strong and Iran deal imminent.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I get a phone call from the CME, and they're pissed off at me for having put that video up there rather than calling them.
Yeah.
And I said, oh. So what you're saying is that some guy who's a retail trader with, you know, some dough in the market, but not a huge amount, I all of a sudden see something that your employees can't manage to see and trace down first?
I got news for you. They saw it.
Oh, of course they saw it. I said, you know what? You can bite me. You're supposed to be policing this stuff.
No, they're not. They're going to police it if you did it.
Well, duh, yeah. Right? Ultimately, a guy got busted for this.
But he... somebody did, and it's somebody they found they didn't like.
Well, by the way, he wasn't an American.
I was going to say, I was just going to say, was he from Hong Kong or someplace?
No, he was a Brit.
Yeah,
okay,
oh, yeah.
And he actually got busted. Okay,
it's the only reason why he got busted.
Well, duh. So here's the obvious question: at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you go into the futures market and you place a nice big fat short order, and then less than an hour later, all of a sudden it hits and you got $100 million gain in it. You're telling me CME doesn't know exactly who that was?
Yes, yesterday the sell-off came about an hour before something hit the tape regarding a leaked CIA assessment that was sent to the White House saying this Iran war is not over. And, oh, by the way, they still got a million drones left and all this other kind of crap.
By the way, they've got thousands of missiles. And most of them are still there.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's – I had dinner with one of my clients the other night and a friend. And, I have a lot of clients that are friends. And he says to me, he goes, you know, Chief, I listen every day. And he goes, I don't understand. He goes, I voted for Trump. I stand by my vote because I didn't like the
other guy,
the other person. He goes, but how could anybody like what they're seeing? The amount of stealing, the amount of chicanery, the amount of front running. How could anybody say that's justified just because you voted for the guy? He goes, I didn't vote for that.
Well, I certainly didn't vote for that. A column I put up yesterday morning after seeing this was, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Yeah.
All right, and oh, by the way,
that was an old floor term. I think you got that from me.
Well, I might have.
That's okay. But feel free.
But I'll tell you what. If that crap is going on, and that's the entire basis of all of this, if I don't see handcuffs, I'm not really very inclined to be law abiding. And
but you know what,
anybody
Carol,
else.
We'll kind of end on this note. And we'll have lots to talk about on Tuesday. But I went through the stuff yesterday in the Weimar Republic. And I don't think my message is getting out. The message is not that these guys did this. They ran the amount of currency out there so much. But everybody thinks, oh, man, those poor Germans. There were a lot of poor Germans, and there were an awful lot of people that are still rich Germans to this day because of that. And I'm going to put Trump's grandfather's buddies. No, I'm not saying he did, because they kicked him out. They kicked him out for not serving in the army. Boy, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it?
Yeah, go figure.
So, but I'm saying, in that generation, all these people paid off all these farm loans with funny money, and I bet the families still own those places today.
Well, you know, the other thing, though, I'll leave it here. If you want to see why this is going to be worse than 2000 when it blows, take a look at the chart of the Sox.
Yeah, well, look at SMH.
Yeah, but I mean, just between those two, okay, if that doesn't look like February of 2000, you got rocks in your head.
Well, I don't understand. I thought, and I'll say this, it affected my investing for my people to the negative for quite a while. And now we're doing very well for people, but I didn't think during the 2010 to 2018 era that these guys were going to be able to keep this slow drain of money coming in with the market going up every year during the Obama administration. All of them, it's done it all the time. They had a couple of downturns, but basically I didn't believe in it either, and I traded like I did when I started. Some days you went up, some days you went down, and you know, if it went up a few days, maybe you got short. Well, every time I did, I got clobbered. And so, but the thing of it is, I was stunned and educated at the same time by how they were able to pull it off at such a drip, drip, drip sort of level. But now they're increasing it to its way, and I think they could probably get away with that for another decade if they kept it. I wouldn't agree with it, and neither would you, but I think they could probably get away with it, because people generally, I'm not saying they're dumb,
but not on the spike stuff.
But now, all of a sudden, the drip, drip, drips become, well, instead of hitting this guy with a squirt gun, we're going to hit him with a water balloon. Well, it's increasing to the point where we're pouring so much money in now, and it's only going to the market.
Chief, it's the same thing.
Sure,
exponential functions always do the same thing.
Well, or it's also Milton Friedman saying that's why you can't let it get started because
well, that's right.
It feels so good, and it just and people go up a little.
But this is what always it yeah. always goes up your keister. Yes.
But right now, I'm convinced that if something bad's going to happen, like maybe people not show up for an auction or a big hit in Bitcoin or something,
yeah,
all these guys are going to front run that too.
Well, of course they're going to be short in front of yeah. it because they're going to know about it in advance,
right?
Yeah, look, if I can find out that the price of oil is going to go down by $10 in 15 minutes, I can make a god-awful amount of money.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of which, talk about, and I'll admit my mistakes on the show. I thought I put the gas into my truck in the burbs the exact amount, hoping it would come down this week. It's probably down to dime or something. And because I had to take a client to dinner the other night,
yep.
I think I might actually have to buy 3 gallons in the city for like $6, so I screwed up. And believe me, I'm going to be pissed off when I'm doing that.
You know, the funny thing is we've had everybody around here tried to hold that $4 line, and most of them managed to do it. Some in the city with the slightly higher taxes did not, but the you know, because, of course, they've got their local overrides, right? But most of the stuff around here... And now it's, but it really hasn't come down.
Well, the suburbs, they're $4.99 all over the place. Now the city, they don't care. My guy on North Avenue is probably $5.70 or something. He didn't care.
See, we're $3.99 basically everywhere, and they're trying like hell to hold that $4 line. But if you go into Knoxville,
our taxes are probably I'm going to say a dollar. What are yours total?
I don't know what the total is.
I'll bet it's 60, 70 cents.
But it's yeah, because I think, was it 53, the federal?
No.
The federals.
Here, state, city, county, and federal is like 70-something, and then you throw the sales tax on top of that.
Right. But I thought that federal was like 53.
No, federal is like 18 or something. It's cheap.
Oh, is it? Is it that cheap?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. You know what? We'll go through it on Tuesday. I got it all right. Saved here. Buddy, have a nice weekend. Ricky, nice job as usual. SP Futures up 32. NASDAQ Futures up 214. Not as much as they were, but still high. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.